Welcome to the 7th edition of Classics Choice. Today, we bring you Passion Play, Part 1. Because of the complexity of this work, and its tight connection with lyrics and the plot, I recommend that you listen to the audio while reading the text. The audio portion has been prepared based on this approach. In my opinion, Passion Play is one of the most underrated albums in the history of classic progressive rock. The first thing that we must keep in mind is that, more than a concept album, Passion Play is a musicalized stage play. One of the reasons why many people dismiss the album is because the lyrics are too dense. However, even though some images may be difficult to assimilate in the context of the play, the overall plot can be followed without too much effort. The way in which the music portrays the events of the play is rarely matched in the history of progressive rock, and in this particular case, this achievement is even more remarkable if we take into account the fact that part of the work is based on ideas recovered from the Chateau Disaster sessions. Whole fragments were used that were finished works with different lyrics. Despite this, Passion Play did not become the Frankenstein that one would have expected. On the contrary, the work is tight and very coherent. Since this is music to a stage play, we must analyze the work from a musical point of view based on motifs or leitmotifs and the evolution of the plot rather than trying to find an overarching form to the overall structure of the piece. Therefore, we must start by understanding the plot. In summary, the play describes what happens between death and birth, the journey of Ronnie Pilgrim through his afterlife. Quoting Tim Smolko from his book Thick as a Brick and A Passion Play Inside Two Long Songs on page 124, the primary lyrical matter, the afterlife journey of Ronnie Pilgrim, has little to do with the Christian intermediate state, of which there is little on the Bible, and more to do with the Tibetan Book of the Dead. The theme of reincarnation or rebirth is even built into the structure of the music, with the album cyclically beginning and ending with a heartbeat. Interviewed by Brian Matthew on Jethro Tull's Story Part 3, Ian Anderson says, "I had some sort of conception of a piece, and what the whole thing was about was the notion of what might happen to you when you die, and the idea that rather than just sort of be allotted a place in a notional heaven or hell, one still had to make a choice, still had to work on towards other levels of post-death options, you know? You are still able to make choices and do one thing or the other in a post-death experience. A bit sort of Buddhist in philosophy, I suppose. Anyway, that's what it was about, but deliberately couched in fairly abstract terms and a lot of verbal imagery that I wanted there because I wanted people to listen to it and form their own conclusions about what I was saying or what I might be saying." In order to follow the plot, I will use Neil Thomason's excellent analysis, which can be found in his Ministry of Information website. The play is structured in four acts. Overture, Act 1, Scene 1, which is Ronnie Pilgrim's funeral, Act 1, Scene 2, Wandering in Limbo, Act 2, Scene 1, The Memory Bank, Act 3, Scene 1, Heaven, Act 3, Scene 2, Hell, Act 4, Scene 1, We're Now, Act 4, Scene 2, The Ferry. Before analyzing each section, I would like to point out the use of several motifs used throughout the piece that are key to the coherence of the piece as a whole. Tim Smolko identifies six main motifs. Motif 1 is the rhythmic pattern of the heartbeat. Motif 2 is probably the easiest to distinguish. This is motif 3. This is motif 4. This is Motive 5. The last motive is the phrase Passion Play, repeated along the entire work. So let's get on with the overture and its music. Neil Thomason gives a good description of how the play started during live performances in 1973. To set the scene, two giant silver masks hung high above the stage. The huge speakers were housed in large cages above the stage on either side. An enormous white movie screen was hovering above the rear of the stage. Well before the show was due to start, as the audience took their seats 15 to 20 minutes beforehand, a white dot, a spotlight, about the size of a softball, was projected onto the screen, accompanied by a subsonic pulse so low as to be inaudible but slowly rising in pitch until noticeable at a low level. The dot gradually expanded, pulsing in time with the still barely audible live beat. When it filled the screen, it turned red and was replaced by a photo of the dead ballerina in the album cover pose, lifeless and bleeding from the mouth. As the live beat built up, the audience were given a shock. The ballerina started to move. As mentioned already, the piece is cyclical and starts and ends with a heartbeat. The overture also begins and ends with a heartbeat and introduces two of the principal motives that will be used throughout the piece. Notice that soon after the heartbeat, that is, motive 1, is easily heard, a soprano saxophone introduces motive 2. After the initial effects, we find the first stroke of genius in the piece. Instead of a dark, ominous atmosphere to depict the death of Ronnie Pilgrim, what we find is a lively jig in 9x8. It is a macabre dance of death in Baroque style. Remember again the rhythm of motive 1. This rhythmic motive, linked to the heartbeat, is the basis for the overture's main theme. The rest of the gig is also based on a development of motive 1. After the gig, at the end of the overture, we hear the heartbeat slowing down and decreasing in pitch until a door bang clearly indicates the end of Ronnie's transit on Earth. By the way, no other Tull's album features Anderson's abilities as a sax player more extensively than in Passion Play. Let's go to Act 1, Scene 1, Ronnie Pilgrim's funeral. The scene is a winter's morning in the cemetery. A group of mourners stand around a grave. As the curtain rises, Ronnie, a ghost, rises from the grave and joins the congregation, listening to his own eulogy. Instead of a line-by-line analysis of the lyrics, I will just highlight those that are particularly relevant for the understanding of the section. For a detailed lyric analysis, I refer you again to Neil Thomason's article. The wonderful phrase, "The silver cord lies on the ground, summarizes perfectly the lyrics of this section. The form of this scene is A prime, a brief interlude, and B, which is a free form with recalls of motif 2. Sections A are a description of the funeral scene as seen by Ronnie. Section B shows Ronnie's reflection of the life that just ended, his achievements, mistakes, disappointments, etc. Section B has a very important verse. All the old familiar choruses come crowding in a different key. Thomason's interpretation is quite accurate. As Ronnie hears the events of his life recounted, he reviews them from a different perspective and realizes that his friend's memories of those events don't quite match his own perceptions. This provokes the main episode of self-reflection in Act 2. Note the clever modulation to support the phrase crowding in a different key. Does it sound familiar?
Crowding in a different key.
It's the Neapolitan cadence over the dominant chord. He uses it to move from D flat major to A major, and then again to modulate to F, which is the tonality of Act 1, Scene 2. The last verses in all the stanzas in sections A and B are based on motif 2. With all these elements in mind, let's listen to Act 1, Scene 1.
Do you still see me even here? The silver cord lies on the ground, and so I'm dead. The young men say it. Over the hill, not a wish away. My friends as one all stand aligned, although their taxes came too late. There was a rush along the Fulham Road. There was a hush in the passion play. Such a sense of glowing in the aftermath, ripe with rich attainments, all imagined. Sad misdeeds in disarray, the sore thumb screams aloud, echoing out of the passion play. All the old familiar choruses come crowding in a different key. Melodies decaying in sweet dissonance. There was a rush along the Fulham Road into the ever-passion play.
We reach the first instrumental section that serves as an interlude between both themes of Act 1. Tim Smolko divides the piece into six climax cycles. We will be referring to them as we progress in the piece. The first climax cycle goes from the beginning of the vocals in Act 1, Scene 1, to the end of this instrumental section. Three dry beats in the snare drum's rim provide the cue for a section that, like the overture's gig, starts in 9x8. However, notice how on second 24, they suddenly move to an 11x8 beat until the end of the section. Again, this is one of the few passages in Tull's discography where you will appreciate Anderson's ability as a sax player. This instrumental section describes the moment when Ronnie finally moves away from the physical realm and assumes his new state. The acute change in rhythm and the intensity of the passage are excellent ways to depict Ronnie's despair As he starts to wander in this strange new environment, he finally reaches limbo. Act 1, Scene 2, Wandering in Limbo. The scene is the empty desert of Limbo. Ronnie wanders aimlessly until an angel arrives to guide him onto the next stage of the afterlife. An angel escorts Ronnie, and although he didn't believe in gods or angels, she is compassionate. According to Thomason, the verse, "I go escorted by a band of gentlemen in leather bound," represent the words of the prophets in the Bible. But I believe that thinking about illuminated words contained in a leather-bound book is more fitting because it could apply to any creed or religion. At any rate, the importance of this phrase is that this gift triggers Ronnie's reflection on who he is, about good and evil and his acts while on Earth. The wonderful phrase, "no one but someone to be found," indicates that Ronnie, whose life on Earth was not remarkable, starts to understand that he is important and that he must pursue the understanding of who he really is. The form of this scene is a simple strophe, an introduction, A, B, A prime, B prime. Notice that sections B are based on motive 2. You will see that the brief piano introduction is also used at the end of part 1. This piano phrase is superimposed with motive 2 on "ever smile" and again modified on "to be found." Let's listen to it.
And who comes here to wish me well? A sweetly scented angel fell. She laid her head upon my disbelief and bathed me with her ever smile. And with a howl across the
we reach the second instrumental section. This short instrumental interlude is based, like much of the second act, on material from the Chateau Disaster Sessions. Ronnie's desire to understand who he really is propels him to Act 2, The Memory Bank. This section has two contrasting parts, the first more intense, maybe diabolic. The second one, based on acoustic guitar, is more gentle, maybe celestial. A musical representation of the duality that Ronnie will experience during his transit in the afterlife. We reach Act 2, Scene 1, The Memory Bank. The scene is a small but comfortable theater with a cinema screen, the next morning. From this moment until the end of the piece, what happens in Passion Play bears a striking resemblance with Max Heindel's Rosicrucian Cosmo Conception. This book was the basis for my piece Mysticae Visiones. Although the musical languages are very different, the conceptual framework is the same. According to Max Heindel, after death, we see all our past life. More than seeing, we re-experience all our life and get to feel what others felt as a consequence of our actions, good or bad deeds. According to Heindel, since we are not limited by the sensations of our physical body, we experience the joy or pain we caused, but multiply by a thousandfold. He believes this is what the Christians call purgatory. Ronnie enters a cinema room where several judges force him to revisit his life. Peter the Jewer, the duty receptionist of the afterlife, presents Ronnie's life to the panel of judges. A lot of the music and lyrics in this act were taken from Critique Oblique, the Chateau d'Arauville sessions, more commonly known as Chateau Disaster Tapes. Looking at the lyrics from a general standpoint, we see that they portray the process of the judges asking Ronnie to revisit his life, forcing him to look closely at the darkest and most intimate episodes. Ronnie is assessed as an ordinary middle-class Englishman with more lights than shadows. What I just described is enough for our analysis purposes. If you want a detailed line-by-line analysis, again, in the resources section, you can find the appropriate link to Thomason's Ministry of Information website. From a musical point of view, let's break down this long act in major segments. Part 1, an instrumental development. Part 2, part 3, and an instrumental coda. Let's start with part 1. The form of this part is intro, section A, then motive 3, A prime, motive 3 again, B, motive 3 again, A double prime, once more motive 3, and B prime. So notice that motive 3 appears between every vocal section. After part 1, we reach the instrumental development, which is a musical representation of the judges enjoying the film. This section is mostly a reinterpretation of Critique Oblique. Note that the first segment is based on motive 3. Listen to the organ playing the motive in the background. The second segment is based on the development of the following motive. And the third segment is a wonderful flute, or I should say flutes, improvisation. Note that the entire section, until the brief drum solo, is in 11 by 8. The easiest way to count this is to follow the bass pattern. According to Smolko, the second climax cycle goes from Act 1, Scene 2, to the end of this 11 by 8 section. Thank you. We reach part 2. The form of part 2 is introduction, A, interlude, B, then B prime, another interlude, B double prime, B triple prime, and a coda, which has a vocal and then an instrumental part. So let's start with intro. This instrumental introduction is based on a complex rhythm pattern based on two 12x8 bars plus one 9x8. If you have not paid attention to the instrument's interplay, please take a moment to do so. Their tight playing under such a complex beat is simply amazing. And here's the rest of part 2. After watching Ronnie's live, the judges start to make their assessments. Let's go a little bit over the lyrics. Take the prize for instant pleasure, captain of the cricket team, public speaking in all weathers, a knighthood from a queen. Ronnie is a typical middle-class man who indulged on pleasures without thinking about moral consequences, was reasonably successful in his endeavors, and was happily married. All your best friend's telephones never cooled from the heat of your hand, but he abused of his friends. There's a line in the front page story, 13 horses that also run, so maybe Ronnie's success was at the expense of others. Climbing your old umbrella, does it have a nasty tear in the dome? Ronnie's self-image is challenged by the judges. But the rain only gets in sometimes, and the sun never leaves you alone. It seems that on average, his good deeds outweighed the bad ones. You alone, you alone, you alone. Now, unshielded, he must face the scrutiny of the judges. We reach the instrumental part of the coda, which is based on the material from the intro with an equally impressive interplay under this odd rhythm. The section is extended to create a suitable conclusion for part 2. Let's listen to the rest of part 2. we reach part 3. The form of part 3 is very interesting. It introduces new material which is mixed with elements from part 1. Motive 4 is presented and then is combined with motive 3 which belongs to part 1. This yields to a modified reprise of section B from part 1. So in summary, the contrasting section of this part is not based on new material but rather on a modified version of the material from part 1. This way of combining ideas from different parts provides coherence to this long and complex act. The form is intro A, which presents motive 4, then a vocal interlude, A again, an instrumental development, then the intro to B from part 1, where motive 3 and 4 are combined, B prime from part 1, A prime, and finally a coda, which is a vocal plus instrumental, and a vocal again. The intro to this part presents motive 4. Before we listen to part 3, let's stop for a moment and let's look at these three verses. How does it feel to be in the play? How does it feel to play the play? How does it feel to be the play? These three last verses demand a bit of reflection. The first two are rather straightforward. How does it feel to be alive, to be a part of life? The third encloses a profound mystical concept. How does it feel to be life? Anderson puts a strong accent on the word be, and this is quite intentional. Again, the lyrics refer to being one with all creation, the concept of oneness. Ronnie finally understands that he is not part of a play, he is the play. When you're for us, and we're for you. On A prime, the lyrics say, "Man of passion, rise again, we won't cross you out, for we do love you like a son, of that there's no doubt." Again, a profound metaphysical concept is contained in these few verses. Man of passion, rise again. Our desires, passions, projects is what propels us through physical life and triggers our need to reincarnate. We won't cross you out. You have free will. You will continue to evolve no matter what you do. For we do love you like a son. Of that, there's no doubt. You are loved unconditionally. No one brings pains to Ronnie but himself through his own decisions. His passage through the purgatory will be pleasant or painful depending on how he exercised his free will. The purpose of this scrutiny is not to award or to punish, but to allow him to learn, to understand who he really is. This idea is reinforced in the next verses. Tell us, is it you who are here for our good cheer? Or are we here for the glory, for the story, for the gory satisfaction of telling you how absolutely awful you really are? Quoting Thomason, what has been the purpose of this encounter? Has Ronnie been punished by being humbled in front of his peers with no productive purpose? Or do the souls serve a vital, glorious purpose in stripping Ronnie down to the core of his real self? According to Smolko, the third climax cycle goes from the end of the 11x8 section in Act 1, Scene 2, to the end of this instrumental section. So with all this information, let's listen to Part 3.
Sadness. And your little sister's immaculate.
Skin the Cat. In the play, how does it feel to be in the play? How does it feel to play the play? How does it feel to be the play? Man of passion, rise again. We won't cross you out, for we do love. Story for the gory satisfaction of telling you how absolutely awful you really are.
We reach the instrumental coda of the second act. The first thing to note is that motive 1, the heartbeat, returns, but not the pumping sound of the physical heart, but its rhythm played by the guitar. Ronnie's spiritual heart is full of life and ready to proceed with his journey. His next stop is heaven, and the music of this coda very effectively describes his transit as he approaches paradise. Notice that the heartbeat motive played by the guitar serves as a harmonic pedal. For an explanation of what a harmonic pedal is, I refer you to the Starless analysis. This ends the first part of the analysis of A Passion Play. We will continue the analysis of this masterpiece in the next edition of Classics Choice.